Hello and welcome to Vox Burner's Youth Trends podcast. We're kicking off this new season by speaking with Steve Keith, founder of the Queer Student Awards, taking place later this year. Now, in this episode, Steve talks about the importance of celebration and celebrating young people's identity, along with how he personally is celebrating diversity and inclusion. Morning, Steve. Welcome to our Youth Trends podcast. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks, Richard. How are you?
Yeah, look, not too bad. Busy day, but really good to be talking with you. So, look, Steve, you've spoken at many of our YMS events in the past. Mm-hmm. For anyone that doesn't know you or is new to you in your work, great to hear a bit about who you are, your background, and what you've been up to, living at home for a year in your bedroom.
Yeah, well, I'm living back with my parents as well up in the Lake District at the moment, so it's been a big year for me.
Oh, wow.
So potted history of me. So Steve Keith. So I'm an entrepreneur working in student recruitment now for 15 years. And I'm currently doing that under the guise of the branding man. Before that, I was at the professional services firm EY for 8 years. And before that, working for a charity called Teach First. So that was how my career in student recruitment started. But before that, I was a geography teacher in a school in East London. And the work that I do with the Branding Man is about it's about helping employers to share stories about the experiences that their employees are having working for them. And for me, a lot of that focuses on how we can celebrate difference in the workplace as well. So, yeah, that's a kind of me in a nutshell.
Crikey. And did you miss the days of geography teaching?
No. Sure, it's a good question. Like, I don't miss kind of some of the elements of teaching. I think a lot of people from the last 12 months will appreciate from the news coverage that has gone on for schools about how difficult it is to be a teacher, especially when you're trying to deliver things digitally. I really enjoyed my time in the classroom. The geography side of things, like, I came from kind of, I grew up here in the Lake District. So, I mean, at the moment, I'm loving having mornings where I just go out for a walk with a dog for an hour and I'm surrounded by trees, lakes, rivers, the sea. It's just, so that's where my passion from it came from. But it's now part of my story rather than what I do.
Yeah. And Steve, you know, we're here to talk primarily about the launch of the Queer Student Awards, the latest project. Now, currently, over half of young people today don't identify exclusively as straight. How have you seen the LGBTQ plus community evolve since Gen Z entered their teens and early 20s?
Yeah, it's evolved quite a lot. I mean, if you look at researchers out there, so I think there's Big Eye agency did some, and 50% of Gen Z had said that they thought that gender norms were outdated, and so they were much less likely to ascribe to gender stereotypes. And I mean, I'm a massive fan of shows like RuPaul's Drag Race and stuff like that, and they've had a huge impact on, well, popular culture full stop, but especially on how young people view and want to express themselves. I mean, I was having a conversation this morning actually with somebody within the student recruitment world, and we were talking about kind of the ways that employers tend to focus on gender, and it's just seen as being male and female, and females being where targets kind of targeted marketing tends to go. And shows like Drag Race this year really kind of brought to the forefront, I think, conversations around the binary world. You had Bimini and Ginny Lemon sitting there and talking about kind of the way that they identified with themselves. You've got queer influencers like Ben Peachy, who are involved with the awards that have launched. You've got things coming out with like brands and stuff like wall paint coming out, like makeup for men. It's really kind of shifted as well. And I think even within that too, there's been kind of my own journey kind of on of queerness as well. Like when I lived back down in London, I was kind of going along to nights like Sink the Pink and things. And it's been it's really kind of has evolved, and part of that has been, I think, an adoption or reclamation rather of the word queer in there as well, which has been a negative word for the LGBTQ plus community for a long time and a slur. But when you look at sexuality itself, and you've got research that Tag shared at the conference, that the last conference that I spoke at with you guys, where so from Gay Times, and just like how you got like 36% of young people, so the 18 to 24 category, like seeing themselves as being exclusively straight, and then when you go up to the next category of the 25 to 34 year olds, so those people that have being part of Gen Z and maybe in their early, late teens, early 20s and stuff, now that it goes up to 48%. And it's really interesting around kind of that fluid perspective of things and the awareness and openness of people to really experiment with their sexuality. I mean, I went through that myself when I kind of like was exploring my own sexuality when I was at university before I kind of came out properly. But it just seems to be such a big part of culture now, and I think it's really having an impact on companies and brands and encouraging them, or I think in some ways forcing them to be more representative and engage with that audience.
Well, absolutely, and it leads really well on, you know, the next question, that the generational shift seems to have brought around so many issues in society to light, that, you know, and these issues have been there for a long time, but do you think sort of challenging inequalities, you know, and challenging the status quo is equally, if not more important now, or do you think there's just more ways to be vocal, to be seen? Like, you know, you've referenced a lot of your media outlets that are out there. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think in some ways, Richard, I think it's been kind of been like bubbling away under the surface for quite a long time, particularly I look at the LGBTQ plus community piece and everything, and I get very frustrated around tokenism for the LGBT plus community, and think about how I call it slapping a rainbow on it, when brands are kind of just taking the pride flag and just using it for a month and then forgetting that we exist in a way, I think. But when you've got, I think going back to that kind of piece around the vocal piece and being seen, I think you'd be a bit ignorant if you didn't think that the events of the last 12 months haven't influenced that and brought them to the surface more. And I think in some ways it's almost down to a foundation of trust or lack of trust, which has encouraged a lot of young people to battle and look at those injustices and put their opinions forward and find their voices in a way.
And when you say lack of trust, you mean lack of trust with what, like government or brands or society or?
Where do you start? I think like across the board, but I think largely with governments. I mean, but then that can kind of be extrapolated out across everyone. I think there's all, at some point in the last 12 months, all of us have kind of gone, really? With the way that things have been approached with the pandemic. But if you're looking kind of around that kind of generational shift and issues in society and stuff, and put that against influence of digital and lockdown, it's amplified it. It's really easy to connect with people now and to find an audience and a community and lead that community. And I think that's what's driven a lot of the noise that we're hearing.
Absolutely. And what positive ways do you see Gen Z redefining the LGBTQ plus community?
I mean, I think it goes back to kind of like the piece around them finding a community and leading a charge in a way and standing up for what they believe in. But also as well, like bringing others on a journey with that as well. Like it's kind of it's really nice to see how Gen Z are looking across and kind of looking at allyship, whether that's with Black Lives Matters, for example, in the last 12 months, or whether it's looking at LGBTQ plus. There is a real piece around kind of like, I can't do this alone. For LGBTQ plus, I think there's a lot of time, it's something interesting that I heard on a podcast the other day, actually, where somebody who identifies, they're a gay Muslim couple that live in Manchester, and they were saying how it always falls upon those people that identify with a particular community to advocate for and to fight that particular battle. And there needs to be more done in the allyship space. And I think that's where Gen Z are starting to make big headway in terms of getting people involved in the conversation and taking it beyond. I mean, I think that's always kind of been there in a way. If you look at the Pride events and everything, obviously they've not gone on for the last 12 months, but big celebrations. I've had friends that are heterosexual that have come along to those events and supported and everything. But that it's in a fun, celebratory way. It doesn't kind of go, it's surface level for me. It doesn't really drill down and actually tackle things, which is where Gen Z are really doing a lot of work well is around activism. And really challenging things and creating debate.
Well, absolutely. And Steve, look, you referenced, you know, just before I ran, you know, slapping a rainbow on something, I think you said, you know, more and more brands are aligning themselves with causes and social issues, and partly down to expectations of young people today. They expect that from brands. Why is it so important for brands to get involved in this community in particular? And I guess also, why, you know, shouldn't they be just be slapping a sticker on something once a month? You know, it's a year round, you know, 3, 6, 5 day, you know, conversation.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, it's kind of, it's something that affects members of the LGBTQ plus community every day of the year. It isn't just something that we all talk about our experience in the month of June for Pride, or that we reflect upon during LGBT History Month in February, for example. And I think it's that piece around importance of brands to get involved with the community is the same approach that I would take with any kind of brand engagement, I suppose. It's about looking at your audience and engaging with them and talking about what they're talking about. And it's very easy. If you look at that slap a rainbow piece that I talk about, it's easy to spend, well, if I had it, it would be easy to spend it, but it's easy to spend thousands and hundreds of thousands of pounds on a campaign that uses every single social media platform that's out there, that has huge reach, that brings influencers on board. But if the content that you're serving up doesn't resonate, then it's going to fall flat on its backside. And it's a wasted opportunity for me. And I think going back to that piece where I was talking about trust, unless you're building that relationship and having a conversation about those issues that people care about, it's going to come across very fake. And I think that's come back to what Gen Z are kind of doing very positively, I see as well, is they're very good at smelling BS or smelling a rat and calling it out as well. And there's a lot of brands, I think, that aren't used to being called out and don't know how to respond when somebody does.
Sure. And can you, any examples come to mind of brands or campaigns that have really resonated that are doing it well? I mean, you know, there's many that are doing it not so well, you know, not doing it terribly. But yeah, any that stand out to mind that have, you know, really had a positive impact?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, like, it is a hard one to answer, like you're saying, like at some point, because I think one of the reasons that I set up the awards is there's limited options there when it comes to picking good practice, but there are good examples out there. Some of them that I think are really good, you've got organisations like National Student Pride, who've managed to pivot what is a live in-person event and turn it into a digital festival that's happening. You've got Manchester Pride doing the same and having conferences online, as well as the actual parade itself, that luckily, hopefully for me, being somebody who's looking at moving to Manchester, is going to go ahead.
The rest of the world moving to Manchester. All of the UK moves to Manchester, but yes, everyone I know is moving to Manchester, but yeah.
Great, okay, well, I won't be by myself then, that's good. That online shift, I think, has made it more accessible to kind of have conversations and for brands to engage. But if you were to look at consumer brands, which I think are probably the ones where it's more visible that efforts have been made to engage the LGBTQ plus community. One that stands out for me is the Skittles Only One Rainbow Matters During Pride campaign, where they whitewashed the package in a session, essentially, and took away all the colours and everything. Now I look at that and I kind of go, that's great, but also that it's a little bit controversial, because I go back to my slapping a rainbow on it idea and think, well, are you reinforcing and focusing on something that that is a little bit complicated, but I think it is a very clever way to show support as well. And I think other ones that I've seen, I do a lot of volunteering with a charity called Diversity Role Models, and they partnered up with Disney and had a load of Pride merch. And I thought that was a really clever way. The messaging behind it was very clever. It was really tapping into that idea that actually that Disney is there throughout your life, and that the LGBT community is a community that you belong to, and it's a journey that you go on. So I was really impressed with that campaign as well, particularly because Disney, I mean, I love Disney, but it is designed for kids, but that it was something that parents are going to see and engage with as well. I think when you start to go to that level and you've got big brands like that that are putting themselves out there, it's much more engaging and useful than, like, I've seen just like brands, as I said, just slapping that rainbow or selling some rainbow socks for 1 month, or a razor that's got a rainbow on it. And I did last year reach out to quite a few brands and ask them. Maybe I was poking the bear a little bit, but I was kind of just like, well, why are you doing that? Because I would love, if I've got nothing against the rainbow being used, as long as you can explain why you're using it.
Sure, absolutely. And on that, what more do you think brands need to be doing? Yes, the conversation, all year round for sure. Anything else that comes to mind of what they should be doing more of?
I mean, I think essentially, like, it does come back to that kind of piece of having the conversation throughout the year. I have a friend that runs their own D&I consultancy, and they posted something yesterday which kind of spoke to this, I think. And they were talking about the inclusion illusion. And I think that speaks to this kind of like peaks and troughs. I mean, let's face it, there are so many great things that we can talk about, and so many different ways that everybody is different that we can celebrate, that you're probably never going to be able to do everything all the time. But the point of all of these awareness campaigns and weeks and days that we celebrate, shouldn't the purpose of them be that they encourage people to move towards action? We seem to be stuck. I think this is where what brands can be doing more of is it's that next step. We're constantly kind of bringing awareness to things, and I kind of feel like there's a point where, and I've started to see it from friends of mine that identify with being a person of color, for example, and kind of going, well, everybody was sharing a black square 12 months ago and said that they were anti-racist and that they were an ally for our community, but I've seen very few of you actually do it. That's what brands need to be doing. If they've stepped up and said, we support XYZ cause, they really need to start bringing that up to the surface now and showing everybody what they're doing.
Absolutely, taking action.
Yeah.
Steve, I know you've got a background in education and so on. We've got a lot of universities that are fans of the podcast, and I know we'll be listening. What can universities or organisations do to help drive recruitment for more diverse talent? How can they demonstrate to prospective students or employers that they are inclusive? What would you
Yeah.
recommend?
Good question. I mean, for me, like, when I look at it from a recruitment perspective and everything, like, it's about tackling those biases. It's about acknowledging privileges. It's about making yourself uncomfortable, fishing outside of a pond that you would normally go to. There's a really dangerous assumption, I think, that was made in the last 12 months that because we all went virtual and digital and online, that leveled the playing field. And there's a lot of research starting to pop up now that's showing that actually that wasn't the case, because if you didn't have access to the internet and you were a family where there was five kids at home and there was only one laptop,
Yeah, then what?
that's not what the case has been. And so looking also as well across the different efforts around D&I and thinking in terms of the disclosed and the undisclosed characteristics. And again, it's a reason why I wanted to launch the awards, because I've always kind of had a bit of a tension with myself around the fact that for me, a lot of organizations will, it's easier to go and out and target say, females or BAME students, because it's visible, you can see it. Where if somebody's got a disability or they identify as being queer or they come from a particularly disadvantaged background, they're not necessarily always going to be vocal about that. And so I think that demonstration of inclusivity is coming back to actually appreciating that part of inclusion is making people feel safe and making sure that they are not excluded. And that might sound ridiculous, but we kind of, in many ways, we unintentionally do it by focusing so much on particular groups. And I was reading a really great book. I'm reading a really great book at the moment by Matthew Saeed called Rebel Ideas. It's about the power of diverse thinking. And I think that's what inclusion is for me. And that's what kind of universities and organizations should be doing, is essentially like ensuring that they're not looking to confirm what they already know, but they're actually looking for what they don't know.
What they don't know.
Yeah.
Thank you. Steve, let's hear a bit more about your new venture that I know you've touched on a little bit, the Queer Student Awards. Really keen to hear how it came about, what's happening, and how can the industry get involved?
Yeah, so I mean, I was looking to launch it 12 months ago, and then Corona came along and said, no, you don't.
It was designed to be an in-person event and whatnot initially, yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And I'd looked, I think there's loads of great award events that are out there, whether it's from a consumer brand point of view or an employer brand and student recruitment perspective. What I find sometimes quite tiring about award ceremonies is that they can become quite formulaic. And I don't just mean in terms of like having categories and winners, kind of that is the bread and butter in an award ceremony, but that it involves people going along in a nice tux, a nice dress, sitting down and having a meal, usually a piece of like tired old chicken that's been wrapped in some bacon, getting absolutely smashed, and then having a good night, but that it doesn't necessarily celebrate as much as it could do. And I've always been an advocate for young people. It's come from my time in teaching, but also through the conversations that I've had over the years, focusing on apprenticeships in particular when I was back at EY. And so I was like, let's create an awards celebration that's focused on young people, celebrates them, brings them into the conversation, challenges employers in terms of the submissions and entries that they're putting in for the awards to really think carefully about how they are actually supporting their community and celebrate that. So some of the categories in there, for example, that are speaking to that, like there's the Employee Network of the Year category in there. And it would be very easy, I suppose, to just copy and paste what you do in general as a network and put that as a submission. The criteria that I've designed with some of the other judges that are on the panel, it's very much kind of like how does the work of that network support young people, and that's what's awarded rather than it just being a we've got a network kind of approach. And so there's 13 different categories that are there. Anybody that's a student can enter and nominate themselves. People that are an ally for somebody that identifies with the LGBTQ plus community can nominate a friend. There's if you've got a friend that's a teacher or you're in a school working alongside a teacher that is out. It's one of my biggest regrets of my teaching career is that I was in the closet. I didn't share that part of myself. And I think those people that stand up in front of hundreds of kids every single day and tell it like it is about themselves deserve recognition much just as much as the young people, because they're being role models. So there's categories in there for that too. It's going to be a virtual event for this year now because of everything that's going on, but the plan next year will be that we will have an event somewhere in a big city with there'll be no tables, there'll be no sit-down meal, it'll just be a big glittery sparkly gay old party. And it'll just be a celebration, like I think these awards celebrations need to be, and a positive step in a direction towards queer students feeling valued.
Absolutely, being valued, I think that's absolutely paramount, to be valued. And Steve, and the aim of the awards, obviously to celebrate, would you say yes?
To celebrate, yeah, but to also going back to what I've been saying, Richard, to start those conversations.
Start the
I'd
conversation.
love it to be a platform that it's not just going to be something that pops up every year. That if you look at coming up in the latter latter half of May, you've got International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia. You have Pride Month. We have in the year there's Transgender Visibility Day, there's Lesbian Visibility Day, all these days that are being celebrated, that actually this is the start of being able to make the community visible throughout the year and a way for employers, schools, universities to really commit to engaging with and going on that journey with young people.
Absolutely. Steve, and for anybody listening, if they want to get involved or find out more, what's the best route? Email, phone, text, go on.
I'm not on Snapchat. I'm not a very good snapper. I'm not on TikTok either, so it's not on there at the moment. Maybe some of the student panelists will take it on there. I'm certainly going to be tasking them with that. But the best place to find information out about the awards is the website. So the queerstudentawards.co.uk. We've got a growing Instagram channel at the moment, which just has the handle of at the Queer Student Awards. And those are, I suppose, those are the two best places to go and have a look and find out about those different categories and see how you can get involved.
Right. And I believe Voxburner are judging. One of my colleagues is a judge, is that right?
Yeah, so Olivia Newman is on the judging panel, so I'm very excited to have her on board. We've got various different different judges on there that are on the panel that was part of the sponsorship package that they're engaging with. But then there's some queer influencers, there's people that hosts of other podcasts that are out there that I know. There's one of my best friends, Harriet, who is if I was to put somebody up on a plinth and go, that is what an ally is, it's Harriet. So Harriet's on the panel. We've got a really great story that I'm hoping to kind of tease out of her, maybe of them, sorry, on my own podcast would be Sarah, that's on the panel, is representing one of our sponsors, the ICAW, and she identifies as being intersex. So just lots of different people on there that you wouldn't normally find on a judging panel. But yeah, Olivia's on there, very excited to have her.
Excellent, excellent. And what's the date of the awards finally?
So the awards will be hosted online on the 1st of July.
On the 1st of July. Okay. Well, look, Steve, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon and spending some time talking to us. It's been hugely interesting. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And best of luck with the awards.
Thanks.
A big thank you to Steve for joining us and kicking off our latest Youth Trends podcast season. For more insights into Gen Z, head to voxburner.com and catch up on our blog, which is updated daily. Have a great week, and we'll be back here next week for some more Youth Trends from Voxburner.